And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
High in the air. Brito back at the wall. Adios, pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy. They're going to get accountability. They're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another. And I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 129 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy Baggerly. Andy, I'm going to read to you a list of the Giants hitters who have struck out exactly 129 times in Giants history. There's Will Clark, there's JT Snow, and there's Brandon Crawford. So the secret to being a forever Giant, strike out exactly 129 times.
Clearly, they give gold gloves out based on how many times you strike out. Yeah.
Ooh, that is a common denominator. Yeah. That's okay. So Will Clark did it in 1988. JT Snow did it in 2000. Brandon Crawford did it in 2014. So those are pretty good years. I mean, 88 wasn't that special, but it, you know, those are good Giants years. So strike out 129 times someone this year.
You know, it's kind of funny. If you've just won one gold glove in your career, you can say you're a gold glover. It's like, you can't do that if like you're a Hall of Famer. You don't have like one, like Brady Anderson isn't walking around saying, I hit 50 homers one year. I'm a Hall of Famer. But you can be, but you can be a gold glover one time and you're a gold glover for life. I think that's a pretty cool thing.
That is pretty cool. And it's like, they'll show it on the graphic, like, before the game, like especially on NBC Sports Bay Area, they'll have the graphic where you have all the fielders and you get to see who's won a gold glove. And occasionally there'll be like some 38-year-old in the outfield with a gold glove next to his name. And it's like, I'm not sure that's what that means, but he's a gold glover. That's right, forever.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it is something that's interesting to watch on this Giants team. You've got Buster Posey, who's won a gold glove. You know, he snuck one in there somewhere where when Yadier didn't win one. You got Evan Longoria, who's won gold gloves. And, you know, you don't think of these guys as being people who are going to win a gold glove this season, but I mean, they're still pretty darn good defensive players. And, you know, Gabe Kapler said it a week or two ago that he thinks Longo is playing about as good defensively as he ever has. And I'm really impressed by how he's played when he's been in the shift and had to go up the middle and even turn the pivot on a double play and looks pretty darn natural doing it. I mean, it's and I sort of realized this when I wrote about Evan last week. You know, we take for granted this guy is, you know, there's only like three or four guys in the major leagues who've driven in more runs than he has. Only three or four guys who've played more games than he has. He's been around a long time and been pretty darn solid for a long time as a two-way player. And, you know, it's a long season. People get hurt. But, you know, especially Longoria and Posey, I think if you had to point to two positives on the position player side in April, it would be just how those guys came out of the gate.
Yeah, it's a weird position, third base, when it comes to Hall of Fame stuff, because for whatever reason, that position is messed with the most. You've got, you know, Scott Rolen, you have Darrell Evans. It's Ron Santo took forever. You know, Longoria fits in with that crew. He might not be a Hall of Famer, might not be a fringe Hall of Famer. He might not deserve anything other than a little bit of consideration at the very end. But he fits in with that, just steady for a long time, good at everything, doesn't put up eye-popping home run numbers or batting average or the offensive statistics. But like, his WAR is up there. He's just, every year he comes in and he's just doing excellent things. And this is as good as Giants fans have ever seen him. He's on another level right now.
Yeah, and obviously the big thing is he's got to stay healthy. And then that's going to be the trick. And, you know, it is kind of funny to think about it. The Giants have played 28 games. And last year, that was the All-Star break, if there was an All-Star break. That's half a season. Weird. So we keep referencing back to how good they were offensively last year. Well, they didn't have to kind of grind through the grind. You know, right now they're about halfway through a 60-game season, but they still got 134 games to go. And, you know, wrote about this a little bit after Sunday's win in San Diego. They've got the best record in the National League as we're recording this. They're atop the National League West. They also are probably going to put Tommy La Stella on the injured list. We don't know when Donovan Solano is coming back. Longoria's been in and out of the lineup. Crawford's been in and out of the lineup. Buster's has been, maybe their best hitter, but he's still, Buster Posey is a catcher in his 30s, and you can't just stick him at third base or even use him off the bench that much on his off days. So, this is a long way for this group to navigate, and they're already getting pretty nicked up. And, at least Mike Yastrzemski's coming back hopefully soon, they think by Friday. But you understand why they went out and got a Mike Tauchman. They already are in the realm where they're thinking, hey, we might need some reinforcements here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I did the power rankings for the National League this weekend, and it really got me to notice every team is dealing with weirdness on the injured list. Every team has a bullet-pointed list of guys who are out for them. And maybe that's because of the truncated season last year. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it's just a fluke, but a lot of teams are dealing with this. And for a while, it was easy to point to the Giants and say, well, they're prepared for this. Solano goes down, you've got La Stella who can fill in, and Yastrzemski goes down, they have outfielders who can fill in. Right now, it's starting to look a little bit thinner with both Solano and La Stella out. It's going to get, the Giants had to prepare for this a little bit, but I think that their depth is really getting tested right now.
And where they gain a lot of value off their bench when they can make sort of that mid-game line change, that's predicated on guys being healthy. They have the depth to plug people in who, aren't just going to be totally overmatched in the big leagues. But by the same token, for them to kind of leverage their strength of their bench, you can't have those guys in the starting lineup, maybe not getting the matchup that you want. So, as soon as they can get a little closer to full strength, the better. And, every team is challenged. Every team goes through it. The Diamondbacks are without Kettle Marte, who's probably their best offensive player. The Rockies probably will be without Trevor Story to start the beginning of this series, and they're lucky that he didn't fracture anything in his hand when hit by a pitch on Sunday. You've got the Dodgers on the pitching side are dealing with all kinds of injuries, and the Padres already had to go without Tatis for a few weeks. So every team deals with it. No one's ever going to feel sorry for you for having injuries, as players will always say. But you're right. I'm a little surprised at the number of injuries on the position player side around baseball right now, because we all expected it to be pretty unpredictable from a pitching standpoint. But, you've got some star-level players who are out right now. Juan Soto is out right now.
Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger is out for the time being. Look at the Pirates, the poor Pirates. They don't have that much to be excited about, except, hey, here's Ke'Bryan Hayes, and he's really exciting. And, look, he hit like 8 home runs in the first 3 games of the season or whatever it was, and then he got hurt. And not that he's on my fantasy team or anything as well, but he's out. So, it's the number of injuries on the position player side, I think, to me, has been a little bit surprising.
Andy? Ke'Bryan Hayes is also on my fantasy team, so I share your pain. Let's have a quick moment of silence for what we thought we were going to get for Ke'Bryan Hayes. No, you're right. It's the position players who are coming in, coming out, that you've got weirdness. And it's not all that it's strained hamstrings or obliques or the injuries you would think you might get when you're like ramping up to a full season. There's a lot of, Tatis' shoulder. That's probably has nothing to do with the 60-game season. But it just feels like baseball in general has to account for a reckoning of injuries. And the Giants were prepared for that. They had a deep 26-man roster on all counts. But it's getting tested. It really is getting tested. And I'm interested to see what they do without La Stella and Solano. I'm not sure. Do you think it's Dubon playing more infield? Do you think Jason Vossler comes back up and gets a ton more action? How are the Giants going to navigate this?
Yeah, I think Vossler will be the guy they plug in for La Stella as a left-handed matchup. And I do think Dubon will get more time on the infield. And that was partly, the Tauchman move, I think, allows them to put Dubon on the infield a little more. So will they be able to kind of swing the gate and go all lefty to start a game and then switch to all righty like they've been doing? Probably not. They're probably going to have to make some matchup concessions. But I think they'll be able to cover their bases. It will be more important, though, that they get Brandon Crawford and Evan Longoria back on the field reliably and not feel like they have to, you know, make a lot of concessions to the, some of the ways that they've been banged up as well. But, you know, it's you go through patches like this and you go through patches of the season where, you know, you just have trouble putting together a really healthy lineup and you're going to have people playing at less than 100%. Probably everybody's less than 100% most of the year in some respect or another. I just remember there was one series. I don't remember what year it was, but Bruce Bochy was managing and we were in Atlanta. And Aaron Rowand was on the team. Nate Shearholz was on the team. It was probably, it might have been 2010. More likely, it was a little earlier. But, you know, we heard that Rowand had some injury and he had to be scratched. And then Shearholz had some injury and he had to be scratched. And they scratched like four guys and put out like five lineups in the span of like 45 minutes. And Bochy, we go in his office and he's, you know, he's looking at his phone. We walk in, he puts his phone down. He just gives us this blank stare like, I've never seen anything like this. And you just have it. You have it where sometimes it just hits in waves. And you want your players to be honest and tell you, hey, you know, I'm really not good to go, because you want them to not feel like they're going to go out there and be compromised. But you also need to just put a lineup together some days. You know, there are going to be days out of 162 when that's going to be a struggle. You hope as the Giants go to Coors Field, which is a place where a lot of hamstrings do go twang, that they don't kind of compound their problems with having any other injury issues.
I'm sorry. I'd like to think that what actually happened is he went into the clubhouse and Bruce Bochy put his phone down and said, well, what the hell am I supposed to do? Put Ishikawa out there in left field?
Right. Yeah, let's put Ishikawa in left field and let's put,
do that.
Let's just slide Uribe over and put Edgar Renteria out there and Michael Morse and Cody Ross and all these guys playing out of position. Somehow it'll work out.
Now, another thing that I think we have to adjust our expectations for, it's just overall the offense around the league. So the Giants are hitting .220. They have a .304 on base percentage. They have a .388 slugging percentage. That's a .691 OPS. Not great. You know, that's not great. At the same time, the league OPS is not much different than that. And once you start adjusting for Park, the Giants are close to a league average offensive team, which is weird. So just to take Jason Vossler. So Jason Vossler's had just 9 plate appearances, but his slash line is he's hitting .250. He's got a .333 on base percentage. He's got a .375 slugging percentage. That's exactly an OPS, adjusted OPS of 100, which means that Jason Vossler's 708 OPS is about a league average right now. That's where the league's at. It's weird. And so when you're looking at all these numbers in the outfield, you have Dickerson 211, Slater 213, Yastrzemski 215, you're thinking, sheesh, you know, make some contact, guys. That's baseball in 2021.
You know, it's funny. We haven't had that many opportunities to talk to Mike Tauchman, which sounds like a funny sentence to say.
It's like a limerick.
And once someone pointed out to me that his name is Mike Tauchman and that is like the ultimate DJ or play-by-play person name. I can't get it out of my head. Mike Tauchman. Yes, Mike Tauchman. Let's go to Mike Tauchman with traffic.
I'm Mike Tauchman right now.
As am I. you know, we've only gotten to converse with Mr. Tauchman twice, and he's very thoughtful. He speaks very measured, kind of deliberate way, and he'll have this pause where you think he's going to say something incredibly profound. And then he'll say, hitting is hard. And he's said that, whether to us or to Greg Papa on the postgame show, I think he's said that like 50 times in 3 interviews. Hitting is hard. And you know what? He's right. It is hard. It's never been tougher to be a major league hitter, which actually it makes what Posey is doing, especially in Longoria, even more impressive, right? I mean, these are guys who all this velocity and all this crazy movement and stuff, guys in their 30s who have to, you know, maybe cheat to get it on top of fastballs. You think that they're just going to be cooked. And, you know, we saw it in 2016 or 18 even. I remember Andrew McCutchen, you know, would talk about, man, everybody's throwing 98 now. It's like, and you could tell he's like, this is annoying. This is going to shorten my career. And somehow Posey and Longoria are managing to not only compete, but thrive in that environment. But yeah, hitting is really hard. And I think that there are probably some things that baseball is going to have to do. As much as I love the fact that the game kind of organically has fixed itself over the years, it's gotten to the point with these strikeouts that I don't think moving the mound back is really what you want to do. I just think that the dimensions are kind of sacrosanct for me. But I do think there are some other things they're going to have to do to make the hitting environment a little friendlier.
Yeah, I was listening to Mike Kruko on the Murph and Max show today, and he brought up a couple good points. He said, first of all, the offense is lower because you have... It used to be the changeup was a real specialty pitch, hard to throw for strikes. Not too many people had it. Now everyone has it. Everyone will throw it in a 2-0 count. They'll spot it for strikes. They'll waste it below the strike zone. Like, it's just every pitcher can do that, from the closer to the long reliever. And that's freaky. And the other thing he said was that at this point, the swing from the, he called it the swing from the ass on 0-2 that everyone does. Those are actually his words. It was very profound. You know, at some point, there's going to be some diminishing returns on that, because there's going to be value in going to the other side and taking what the defense gives you and hitting against the shift. Maybe it wasn't working a year ago, 2 years ago, but now that these pitchers are able to just not give in on fastball counts, maybe there is value to a little bit of small ball and going the other way.
I think especially if they see in the minor leagues that some of these rules will work. I think it's double A where they're going to have kind of an NBA illegal defense rule where you have to have infielders on both sides or on the infield dirt, I think, to start. Maybe that will lead to some different outcomes and some different approaches. And I know that a lot of the analytic-minded people are like, well, yeah, but a ball in play is a ball in play. Well, you don't know how a hitter is going to change their approach, you know, to maybe choke up a little more and try to protect and do the things with two strikes that hitters have kind of been taught to do, you know, for decades and decades before now. So, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think it's really painful to watch, like, the last two innings where that Padres sidearm pitcher threw like 48 pitches in two innings and was walking everyone. And, you know, it's just that's not entertainment. I mean, the game has to be entertaining, or else, you know, it's not even going to be worth doing. And you're not going to be able to entice the next generations of fans. I don't blame any kids. I will never like pound my fist and say, oh, attention span, you know, if young people don't embrace baseball, if all they're going to do is watch walk after strikeout after home run. Okay, now sit back down and now we're not going to see anything. I mean, we need action. We need action in the sport, and we need athleticism. And to me, the most exciting play that happened in Sunday's game was Mauricio Dubon's play up the middle to throw out a really fast Jurickson Profar and in the sixth inning. And that was a great, great play. Stepped in front of Wilmer Flores to make it. And that's the kind of athleticism and the kind of, you know, sort of things that make you sit up and take notice and cheer an out when you don't expect an out to be made. That's the stuff that I think is really entertaining. And we got to get more of that in the game.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Yeah, I don't want to be Abe Simpson yelling at a cloud. I really, really don't. At the same time, when I think back to the most fun I've ever had watching teams, and yes, you will have, you know, the Astros and the Dodgers, and they were, you know, banging each other's heads into lockers in the 2017 World Series. Like, that's fun. But the 2014 and 15 Royals, that's about as much fun as baseball can give you. That is, so the 2014 Royals, I don't even think they hit 100 home runs in the regular season. But every time they got on base, there was some fast dude there, and they were slapping singles all around. They had Aoki, they had Kane. I mean, they once they got to the playoffs, you're talking Terrence Gore. That was really, really fun. And I don't know if baseball can get there, like, with all 30 teams. I think that's a relic. That's a 1980s team. At the same time, that's also fun, and I liked watching that team.
You know, it was interesting. You had that Royals team, and then you had the 2012 Giants, who hit the fewest home runs in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And people forget that. And it probably was their best offense of the three teams that won the World Series, because they had Melky Cabrera, and they had Angel Pagan, and they had guys hitting doubles and triples, and guys getting on base. And then you added in Hunter Pence and Marco Scudero. And I mean, that was a team that could that offense really be competitive in 2021? I don't know. It's what do you think?
I don't know. And part of me, because do you remember the 2015 Giants? I mean, we can just go back there. That team was a loaded offensive team. That team, I believe they led the league in OPS or close to it, adjusted OPS. You had Posey, Belt, Panic, Crawford in the infield, Matt Duffy in the infield. You had an outfield of Aoki, Pagan, and Pence. All of them could do something at the plate, and they all had adjusted OPSs over 100, well over 100 in most cases. That was just a fun team to watch, and it feels like StatCast, that was when StatCast came in to all the ballparks, and that's when you got the real elaborate shifts, the real elaborate defensive alignments. That's when you had players taking off their hats or checking their back pocket in the middle of a game to see exactly where they're going. And I think that team's dead forever. Like, I think that kind of team, just gap to gap, built for Oracle Park, I don't see that team coming back regardless of what happens, regardless of the rule changes. I just think that's a relic, and there's too much data right now to go back to that.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. And you also kind of, it leads me to wonder just how much of a discussion along these lines went into changing the ballpark dimensions, realizing that having our ballpark, Oracle Park, being an outlier, how much was that turning into a disadvantage given where trends were going in the game? I have to believe that was a big part of the discussion.
Yeah, no, that makes a great point, because last year you saw the confidence with especially the left-handed hitters. Maybe it wasn't all confidence, but I can't argue against that, against what Belt did and Crawford setting a career high in slugging percentage. I was skeptical about the ballpark dimensions. I really liked having a freaky unicorn of a ballpark, but I can't argue with the results, and I think I'm on board now.
Yeah, I'm looking at the 2015 Giants because you piqued my interest. And yeah, boy, Casey McGee was on that team. I forgot all about that.
Who?
Exactly.
Who? Yeah, exactly. That doesn't ring a bell. Yeah, that was a frustrating team. But it was because the pitching wasn't quite there, and Giants fans were used to pitching. You know, that was the Giants. You had Lincecum and Kane and Vogelsong and Sanchez, and you were just used to good pitching. But you had Madison Bumgarner and Pray for Rain, basically. I guess Chris Heston had that great season. But yeah, that was a weird team in the middle of that postseason every other year run.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So what do you think the identity of this team is? I mean, can we figure that out after 1 month? I mean, imagine, you know, what we thought about last year's team and how, you know, how surprising they were offensively. And that was the story of the season, you know, and a bummer that they finished basically one game short of sneaking into an expanded postseason. But, I mean, like we said, we're halfway to pretty much a 60-game season right now. And if the patterns were to hold, we'd be talking about how great the pitching was and how surprising the pitching was. It'd be the story of the season. But now we got 130 plus more games to go. We don't know how many of these trends are sustainable, which maybe team strengths haven't emerged yet. Do you think you have a good handle, or can we say we have a good handle on just what what the strengths and weaknesses of this Giants team are going to be when it's all said and done?
I don't think so, because I've written two articles already about, you know, any minute now the Giants are going to start hitting, and here's why. And I present, you know, this very detailed list of statistics, and I have my facts behind me, and the Giants will make me look like a ding-dong that very next day. I mean, they aren't hitting, they aren't barreling balls. They are barreling balls up, but they're just not scoring runs. They're not sending runners around the carousel. It's all or nothing. It's got to be a home run if they're going to score. I think that's a part of the equation right now. This is a team that needs the home run to score, and against the really best of the best pitchers. You saw it a little bit with the Marlins because they have some excellent starting pitchers, but against the best of the best, whether it's Walker Buehler or Clayton Kershaw or Mark Melanson, they're going to struggle because those guys are too good to give up home runs, three-run home runs. I mean, you're just not going to see them give up three-run home runs that often. So the Giants maybe are going to need to figure out how to get on base more, how to put the ball in play more, how to hit the single occasionally, the double, please. I mean, that sort of thing is their identity right now, and I think they'll snap out of it, but again, they've made me look like a ding dong before.
Double, please. I'd like to order a double.
Please, just a double-double, please.
And if you don't give me a double, then I will have to order a double to drown my sorrows.
Oh, well, you know what? I haven't had a double-double in about 14 months. I'm 2 weeks vaccinated as of tomorrow. Maybe I'm just going to go and get a dang double-double. That sounds really good right now.
You know, I have to say, my personal discipline isn't always there in what I put into my body. But I will say that I live within walking distance of an In-N-Out. I could probably walk out my front door and be at the In-N-Out in 10 minutes. And I have not gone to the In-N-Out once through the entire pandemic, not once. So yeah. And at this point, it's almost like a point of pride, like, yeah, I'm resisting you. But they're also delicious. And if I had to spend like, I don't know, 6 months in like Japan or someplace, if I came back, I would probably hit up that In-N-Out before I even made it back to my house. So,
yeah. Oh man.
Good to have there. It's almost like a food security blanket that it's right there, so close.
You know how much I like In-N-Out burgers? I will have exactly one of their french fries just to have an In-N-Out burger.
I was going to say the fries are garbage. We must.
So
I
mean,
it's a cliche take, but they're so dry and starchy. They're not good.
I don't understand it. It's like why? It's like that is a stubbornness I cannot figure out. Like, who is just saying, no, keep them garbage. Keep them garbage. That's our brand. Like, it keeps the lines manageable. Come on, keep them garbage.
We'll sell more animal style sauce so people have something to put on them because they're so dry and bad. I love the crinkle cut fries. Give me the crinkle cut.
I'm a sucker for like all fries. Like, I'm not wild about sweet potato fries, but I'll do steak fries, I'll do crinkle cut, I'll do curly fries. I just fry up a potato, make it completely unhealthy, and salt it up and give it to me, and I am a sucker for it. And for some reason, the best burger that's available to me on a regular basis just has the very worst fries.
Where do you fall on tots? Where do tots rank for you?
Tots. I'll have tots for breakfast. I'll have tots for lunch. I'll have tots. I mean, my wife woke up to at like 1 o'clock a couple weekends ago, and I just have like a baking sheet of tots in the oven because I'm a child. I'll eat them plain, ketchup, ranch, whatever. Tots. I love tots. Give me tots right now.
Yep. You know what? I've seen on the road, I remember when I used to go on the road, there were ballparks that have tachos. They're nachos, but instead of chips, you get tots. You got to eat them fast though, because when they get soggy, they're no good.
Fair.
We had a recipe one time, and you can actually do this. You take the frozen tater tots and you put them directly into your waffle iron, and you just make a waffle out of the tots. And it works. I mean, I will say that we only made it once because cleaning that waffle iron is no fun. After it is enough of a barrier to entry. If I had someone I could hire to like clean the waffle maker, then I would have it like every day. But yeah, the tot waffle is worth trying at least once.
Tot waffle. Boy, that's a careful kind of thing. I would do that. I don't have a waffle iron. I am now thinking about just like purchasing one on my phone. That's the danger. I can order one while I'm talking to you on my phone. Have it here by tomorrow.
You can order a waffle iron that makes waffles in the shape of the Death Star. So you could make a tot Death Star waffle.
Oh man. All right. I think you're going to get me in trouble. I think you're going to get me in trouble. All right. You know, before I go, I am going to write about Tyler Rogers today. And I'm just sort of going into all the StatCast stuff. I mean, he's just allowing the softest of the softest contact. And when I'm writing something on a Monday morning and I talk to you, I like to pick your brain about it so that you can do some of my work for me. He is obviously leading the league in appearances this year. He led the league in appearances last year. The record for most relief appearances through 28 games is 18. It's shared by 11 pitchers. You're not going to be surprised to know that there are three Giants. You're definitely not going to be surprised to know that two of them were on the 2004 Giants, Felix Rodriguez and Matt Herges. Felipe Alou, a lot of contributions to baseball, but he was a little weird with his bullpen. At what point do the Giants, have to dial Tyler Rogers back? I think it makes sense a lot of the times when they put him in, but he's at 16 appearances now, and I think he's on pace for like 100 or something like that. That's not sustainable, right? At what point do they settle on the alternate eighth inning guy?
Well, I think there's two kind of considerations. The most important one is obviously Tyler Rogers' arm and his health. And, you know, the way he pitches, we always think about taxing an arm, but it's really taxing the whole body for him. I mean, if anything, the rest of his body probably gets taxed even more than his arm does, because there's so much that he has to do in terms of his, I mean, think of his back and what it takes to warm right up and throw the way he does. I mean, let's hope he stays healthy for the rest of his career and then through his second career as a firefighter who, you know, saves people's lives and is awesome and everything. But, you know, if he does get hurt at some point, I would say dollars to donuts that it's going to be his back before it's his arm. And we've seen that with other pitchers who have kind of unique deliveries. I mean, Tim Lincecum, it wasn't an arm injury that took him out. It was his back and his hips. So, you know, I think that that's obviously the main consideration. The other thing is you probably want to reduce his exposure and make sure he remains unique to opponents. You know, you don't want to show that sort of trick pony off all the time, or else people are going to start to get a handle for how to approach him. And that the novelty is less of a novelty the more you see it. So, I do think it's going to be imperative that they do find some other people who can step into that role. And, you know, Wandy Peralta is a guy they were using in the late innings. Well, they traded him. We do know at some point they'll have John Brebbia, who maybe could slide into that role. But, you know, it's going to be a while before we see him. And they're probably going to have somebody else step up, whether it's Zach Littell or whether it's they get Matt Whistler confident and right again. You're right. It's not super sustainable that Tyler Rogers is going to appear in 100 games. As much as the ghost of Mike Marshall would say, what, 100 games? I was in 100 games and through 200 innings. It's just not something you see in today's baseballing, so to speak.
Okay. Might be his back. All right, slow down a little bit. All right, so might be his back. Limiting exposure. No, that's all great stuff. I mean, that's exactly what I was, like, concerned about, because his strikeouts are down. He's missing fewer bats this year. At the same time, he's allowing just the weakest of the weak contact, and I wouldn't say that that's a fluke. I think that there is something there. You're seeing just hitters be completely befuddled when they face him, and it results in weak ground balls, the double play when he needs it. But if they keep seeing him, you know, if Mike Moustakas keeps seeing Tyler Rogers, is he really going to swing at a changeup at his face? I don't think so. And he literally swung at a changeup that was at face level. And I've seen a lot of Pablo Sandoval stuff. And, like, I don't remember Pablo Sandoval swinging at a face level ball that often. Once you start seeing him, I don't think Mike Moustakas is going to swing at that ball anymore.
Yeah, it's that sort of, I don't even know what he calls the pitch, that sort of just keeps rising, or at least looks like it's rising to the point where it's right at the chin of a left-handed hitter. And he was throwing it to righties as well to get them to chase. And Kevin Gausman told him a few weeks ago, dude, you're going to throw that to a lefty and you're going to hit a lefty batter in the face. And the thing is, he's probably going to swing at it too. And then, like, not a week later, Mike Moustakas gets a pitch. He starts his swing and he's like, oh no, that's coming from my grill, and bails out as he swings. And that was it. It was the face ball to a left-handed hitter that he swung at, just like Kevin Gausman said. And that's, I think, pretty neat, because these guys have been around a long time. They can see the shape of pitches and how hitters are going to react to them. And I just think it's really unique that Kevin Gausman could kind of predict that was going to happen. And in fact, it it kind of did.
I actually have your tweet embedded in this article where you're quoting Gossman. So I think I need to give you a double byline on this.
Oh, nice.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. Anyways, no, I really do think that getting that eighth inning alternative to Tyler Rogers is going to be the next priority. I think that's almost like why Camilo Doval has been put in these situations, why they were throwing Gregory Santos out there in those high pressure situations. They're just desperate to find that guy.
Yeah, and maybe they'll cycle through a few more. You know, they got Littell up now. They've got Nick Tropiano down there at the alternate site, or at least going to go to AAA soon. So yeah, they have more places they can pivot to, but you also would rather start with the guys you have on your 40-man roster so you don't have to make other 40-man moves, which is, I think, another reason why we've seen Duvall and Santos, and maybe we'll see Kervin Castro before too long.
All right, this has been episode 129 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. When we come back on Thursday, we will know what the Giants did in Coors Field, which has been a traditional house of horrors for them. So this is actually, I'm more interested to see the Giants in Coors Field than I almost am to see the Giants against the Padres or Dodgers. I think this is just as much of a test as the top teams in the division.
And you know what else we've got coming up on Thursday, Grant?
What's that?
Willie Mays' 90th birthday.
Willie Mays' 90th birthday. Yeah, I am going to be at the ballpark for the first time on Friday, and I absolutely cannot wait. I've been patient. I waited for my 2 weeks after my second shot. Going back, baby.
Nice. Excellent. Well, enjoy it.
All right. Well, we will be back on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you then.